Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Welcome to this IASB only meeting, starting with update. Michael.
Thank you. Yes. Good morning, everybody. The Interpretations Committee met on the 18th and 19th of September and discussed a number of matters. Agenda Paper 8 is the IFRIC Update newsletter, providing all the detail of that meeting. I just wanted to bring a couple of items to your attention. There are two items on its current agenda that it's discussed and continued to discuss. One relating to variable payments for the purchase of items of PP&E or intangible assets. And on this particular matter, the committee had been pursuing a model or possible model for accounting for these, which was based on the leases project. In looking at that in more detail, it's decided to take another look at possible alternative models, and we'll be bringing those to the Interpretations Committee meeting in November for consideration. And the four different models that it's going to look at are summarised there on the second page of the newsletter. And then the other item on its agenda that's discussing is accounting for employee benefit plans with a promised return on contributions or notional contributions. This is continuing on the work from draft interpretation D9 that had been halted a few years ago. At the September meeting, the committee discussed in detail the scope of a proposed new draft interpretation and agreed on what that scope should be. And then in the November meeting, it will be talking about the measurement of the plans that fall within its scope. The committee finalised four tentative agenda decision.
Sorry. Ask about this D9, because yes. Was it controversial at the time?
The reason for halting the development of D9 was because the board had taken on a broader project to improve pensions accounting, and so it was being brought into that as part of the discussion paper that was published. Then the board, after the discussion paper, decided to focus on a narrower range of issues that resulted in the amendments to IAS19 about 18 months ago. So following the publication of those amendments, the committee received further requests for guidance on these areas, which had originally been the focus of D9 and subsequently the discussion paper, but weren't addressed within the amendment.
From what I recall, D9 was quite different from the discussion paper.
Yes, it was. It was broader in scope in terms of the types of plans that would be addressed, and it looked at different measurement models. So as part of the committee's work, it will be looking on measurement. It will be looking at what D9 was proposing, the comments we received on that, what was discussed in the discussion paper, and the comments received on that as well.
One of the things that we were told during the meetings is that D9 has been adopted in practice by several firms. In the absence of better guidance, people have been, are already applying it. A significant number of people are already applying.
Do you have any further sort of questions you wanted to raise right now?
Well, I mean, I haven't looked into it in enormous detail. I mean, I did several years ago when we were doing the discussion paper, but I recall it was quite a difficult subject at the time.
It depends.
I just wonder what's going to happen when this comes to the board.
That's
my question, really.
Yes. So certainly the committee are very conscious of the difficulties encountered last time, which is why we started off with looking at the scope and being careful about how broad or narrow that scope should be, with a view to making sure that what we do achieve is something that can go through to finalisation by keeping the scope narrow and focused.
Would that be an amendment to IS-19, or would it be an interpretation?
That's yet to be finalised. The plan is at the moment to develop a draft interpretation, That's the route to go. But, you know, at the end of the day, certainly my view is that we should identify what's the appropriate technical solution and then find the appropriate mechanism in which to implement that. And if that's an interpretation, fine, we can go ahead and do that. If it looks like it may be more efficient to do an amendment, we'll bring this in more detail to you to talk to you about that.
The question, is there something to interpret? Is there something you can interpret and confirm your conclusions, or is it a new measurement attribute or a new solution that requires a standard?
The focus at the moment is on sticking with the measurement requirements, the measurement model within IS 19. So not to depart from that, but to see how that can be applied in these particular situations.
Even at the time, also I have some recollections of the discussion. It was kind of fair value approach.
B9 was more of an implementation of the projected unit credit method that's in 19. The interpretations committee at that time thought it could do it within the standard. As I say, in practice, people have reached the conclusion that this approach is consistent with the standard. So I don't see a lot of the difficulties we had back in the discussion paper were, number one, scope, and number two, it was, for lack of a better description, an embedded derivative sort of an analysis that we were making. The guaranteed return was like embedding a derivative. And we focused on trying to do it that way, as I recall the discussion paper. This is different. This would be an implementation in 19.
Yeah, I mean, if I can add to that, I think that the scope is pretty critical. I think the problems we got into before were to do with scope creep, really.
Yeah.
I think there are at least three different issues. I think one's fairly easily solved, which is what happens if you've got a payment that's just directly linked to the assets, and that's just a discount rate issue, which is, I think, almost a no-brainer and can do with an interpretation. Then there's a second question about the embedded derivatives that Wayne was talking about, and there are a couple of different routes you could go down for that. If you leave them in the scope, you could take them out of the scope, or you could address them. But the embedded derivative type accounting is completely different from the IS 19 model. And then also, I think the board and maybe the committee before at one point tried to address some anomalies with career average plans as well. But I think that's a whole different set of issues.
Yeah, we plan to scope those out.
I thought the problem with D9 was that it didn't reflect the embedded derivative, and that was the advantage of the DP, because a fair value approach would have done. The problem with the DP is that its scope was far too wide, and it was capturing a whole lot of what looked like normal DB plans. Okay, well, we'll wait and see what come up.
Okay. The committee finalized 4 tentative agenda decisions, largely as exposed. I've spoken to you about those before, so I wasn't planning to touch on those, unless you've got questions. And then it's discussed and published 4 tentative, new tentative agenda decisions. These are out for comment at the moment and will be discussed at the January 2013 committee meeting. The two that I just thought I would highlight, one relating to IFRS 3 business combinations and continuing employment. This is a situation where in a business combination, the selling shareholders either become or continue as employees, and part of the payments to them wrapped up with the combination are contingent on their continued employment, and the question about whether that those payments form part of the cost of business combination or whether they're part of compensation for employee services post-combination. Now, this is an issue that has come to the committee because although the current guidance itself is clear about what is required, it appears to be inconsistent with some of the overall approach within IFRS 3, hence the question to us. Given that this is a converged standard, though, this is something that we've been liaising with FASB staff on, because the committee was particularly concerned that it didn't get into a stage of proposing amendments to a converged standard that would risk creating divergence with US GAAP in this area. The FASB are in the process of conducting their post-implementation review of business combinations accounting at the moment, and so the committee has decided to put this on hold until the FASB's post-implementation review has been completed, because the FASB would rather look at something like this after having completed that review. So this is something that the committee will return to sometime next year. And then the other item to highlight is tentative agenda decision relating to the presentation in the income statement of the income and expenses arising on financial instruments that have a negative yield, i.e. a negative interest rate. And the committee's tentative conclusions there were that if you had an expense arising from a negative interest rate on a financial asset, that that expense shouldn't be presented as interest income. It's not revenue. It's a gross outflow of economic benefits. Nor should it be presented, though, as interest expense, because it relates to a financial asset, not a financial liability, but should be presented as or in an appropriate expense classification. So, as I say, all of these are out for comment at the moment.
I've been thinking a little bit about that. Imagine you have a portfolio of financial assets to manage your treasury. You put some of that in, say, Italian bonds, which produce a high positive return, and some in German bonds, which at the time could provide a negative return. And you have a net interest margin or return on your portfolio. What the committee is proposing is that the income from the Italian bonds will be recorded as interest income, but the negative income from my German bonds would not be expense, I agree, because it's not a liability, but would not be presented as a deduction from my interest return on my Italian bonds, and would be somewhere as other operating expense. So for the same financial activity, which is to manage the treasury, and why do you put some in German bonds? Well, you want to protect against credit risk, and this is why there is negative interest on some German bonds. Does it really make sense to not give the user a view of the actual return on that portfolio of treasury instruments?
Well, could identify that actually it's quite important to separate out something that is contrary to what you would normally expect. You would normally expect a financial asset to give you an income. So to, you know, include clearly net would
Not quite usual to have negative income on financial instruments. However, it is a fact of life that these days it does happen, and it is still part of the same business activity, which is to invest for treasury. And you pay for some cost of protection of your capital in the case of the German bonds. So that could be a way. I don't think you can offset. Of course, it doesn't fit the offsetting criteria. But to present a net interest with growth and something negative, and then to have net interest explained in the notes so that people can really understand what is the total return on your treasury, on your assets portfolio. And if you don't have that, you don't see the return on that portfolio. You have to do a calculation taking bits of income and bits of other expense, other operating expense. Is that operating? I don't think so.
And also one point is that you should maybe consider that really interest margin calculation is then impacted if you really don't show it as a negative interest income. Mm-hmm. I think that is really useful information, and a lot of people doing that, calculating net and gross interest margin, and if you exclude it from interest income, might be causing some difficulties.
The difficulty is that it does not meet the definition of income, or does it meet the definition of interest expense.
I was going to say exactly what
conceptual
Wayne
framework
just said.
Constrains us to present
that negative return on a financial asset doesn't meet the conceptual framework definition of revenue, nor does it meet the conceptual framework definition of expense.
Of interest expense.
Of interest expense. So that was what the committee relied on to come to their conclusion. We might address this in our conceptual framework project, but
there's nothing to prevent disclosure if the amount is significant. We were told at the committee meeting that this is, in fact, a fairly rare phenomenon. The practice wasn't seeing an awful lot of instruments that truly had a negative yield. They had zero or very small positive, but there were very few. The question itself, I believe, came out of Southeast Asia.
But my point was not that we should show it, but my point is, okay, if you would conclude, okay, maybe it is, okay, not interest income, but then at least you should mention, okay, that it should not be excluded from interest margin calculations, because that is then misleading.
Okay, Michael, it is to you.
Another item that I just wanted to highlight was discussion about investment property and considering whether a telecom tower or similar structure that is rented out to others would qualify as investment property. Quite an interesting one, I thought. It's focusing on really, is investment property all about the rental of space to others, or is it about something that is a building that is then in turn rented out to others? It has potential consequences for other types of asset. The business model of purchasing telecom towers and renting these out to telecom providers is something that seems to be an emerging business model. So this is a new area, hence I guess that's why it's arising now, even though IAS 40 is some years old. Something that the committee is going to be continuing to look at a future meeting to consider the consequences of this and whether perhaps an amendment to the scope of IAS 40 would be required to clarify whether or not these sorts of assets are within its scope. And finally, there was some feedback that we received as part of our exposure of agenda decisions relating to financial instruments and the matters connected with Greek government bonds. And one of the comment letters that we received included a request that the board should develop guidance on the meaning of expiry in the context of the derecognition of financial assets. So I wanted to highlight this to you. Information, the details of this have been passed to the financial instruments team for their consideration as part of their work, but the committee was concerned that it should be just brought to your attention, so I wanted to do this now.
So is this the question, Michael, whether there's new bonds or there's just a turnover of the old bonds?
That's how it originated, where it came from, and the committee did finalise its agenda decision at the September meeting on that particular point about how to account for those. So that has been dealt with, but in receiving comment letters on that agenda decision, this additional question was brought up.
It's not the same question.
It's a follow-up question.
It's a follow-up.
Yeah. Because I think the agenda decision refers to the cash flow expired from the old instruments.
Yes.
And being replaced by new cash flow, that people ask, what does it mean to expire?
We made a decision intentionally to keep the focus on the issue that we dealt with very, very narrow, a specific transaction involved. And we did that recognizing the amount of difficulty this board has had in dealing with derecognition on a broader scale. And some of our constituents, including ESMA, pushed back at us on that, said we need, unless you all want to be doing one of these every 6 months, you need to do something more fundamental. And it came down to the use of this word, have the right, I don't know precisely, I think it's the risk, the rights and benefits expired as a basis for derecognition. And could we refine that to say expire doesn't just mean that the contract has come to an end, but it can encompass more things.
Sounds like the dead parrot, Jack, you know. This,
yeah, a little bit, yeah.
This parrot is dead. It's expired.
Okay.
How does it die?
Come on, Mike. Okay. Well, those were the items I wanted to bring to your attention. Were there any other questions that you had on the proceedings?
The question back to the TV tower.
Yes.
You mentioned in one sentence about the possible facilities, and it appears the submission gives us examples. The telecom company will install their own facility. Am I right?
That's right. So the structure is provided, and then third-party telecom operators would install their own equipment on the tower. So they're renting space on the tower.
How about if with the facility?
Sorry?
Is the owners of the tower also install some of the facility?
Then there's no question that it doesn't qualify as an investment property, because then they're operating it. But the business model that seems to be developing, and this came out at the Emerging Economies Group, and the Brazilian delegation did an outstanding job in researching this. The business model that's developing is that people put up the tower as an investment property. They have no interest in actually providing telecom services. They literally just build this structure, run electricity to it, and then the telecom companies that are separate come in and hang their stuff on it however they need to do it and pay rent. And the question in 40 is, 40 specifically uses the word building and then talks about essentially a business model. Do you put all the emphasis on the word building, in which case, according to the dictionary, these don't qualify, or to put your emphasis on the business model and the term building is secondary? That's what the committee needs to do.
Now, why I ask this question is, in recent outreach I did for our leasing project, the people ask questions, so different scenarios. In reality, some owners will also install part of the facilities, rent out. Then the question to us is not related to the current standards, our future standards. We made two cuts. The investment property or real estate, we use one cut. And then the equipment, we use another cut. Then they say, if the rentals are combined together, how should we do? Not relevant to that. Different scenario, but in reality, different kind of contract. It's also popular. The owners also installed part of it, because it's impossible. The tower is so high. You're waiting for someone to install the facilities after structures. Normally, you will install some of the facilities at the beginning, then negotiate with the future users.
Yeah, 40 does refer to all of a property or part of a property. I've never envisioned that to mean a percentage. I've always envisioned it to mean a floor. Floors 5 through 9 of a 10-floor building or something like that. But I've never envisioned it to say 36%. That would be a hard one, I think, to get your mind around.
Michael, I had a quick question. The update on IFRS 13 and bare biological assets, in light of the decision to add that to our agenda, is the Interpretations Committee going to continue with the analysis of that question, or is it going to be folded into our work?
We're expecting that your project will actually deal with the issue there. We're liaising with the team that are working on the bare biological assets project. We'll be bringing a paper to the November meeting, just sort of highlighting what's covered in that project and its implications for this one.
Thank you.
Obviously, if you decide to keep a fair value model, you've got to go back to this issue.